My name is Christian Corley. With me is James McLean, and we are going to talk about a couple of things, but we're going to mix them together and mix them up a bit. And last time on a podcast with a K, we discussed Dalek stories. Do you recall that, James?
Yes, I do. It was a while ago.
It was a while ago, wasn't it? And we got some good comments and feedback from that, so thank you very much. And I mean, I'm pretty confident I made the right decision with what I felt was my favourite Dalek story. But this might be a bit tougher. It's multi-Doctor stories in Doctor Who. And it is one of those things that... the multi-Doctor story is a weird thing, because it probably really shouldn't happen. And, you know, if there is... I mean, we know, we've discussed before, haven't we, that it really isn't an awful lot of consistency in Doctor Who beyond the two central characters of the Doctor and the TARDIS.
Mm.
And those two are pretty flexible themselves. So, the multi-Doctor... I mean, what do you think multi-Doctor adventures... Because they shouldn't really happen, should they? And they do happen, and then they cause their own sort of little continuity issues that people obsess over.
Yeah, well, it's the issue that Doctor Who's always had, that it's never been quite sure, well, intentionally, never sure really how time travel works. And yeah. I think that presents a problem that multi-Doctor stories never really want to get into. Dare the Doctor being a little more modern and sort of more reflective on its... legacy starts to a little, doesn't it, with its sort of conversations about who, what can be remembered. But ultimately, yeah, they are a sort of a messy affair.
So,
and because of that light.
The light.
Yeah, well, they have to be, don't they? Because they're there, well, as we'll probably talk about, they're there in a lot of ways to celebrate.
Yeah.
They're normally brought out as a celebration, and celebrations are normally brought out because that can canvas wide publicity. Wide publicity brings larger audiences. Larger audiences require less nuanced stories, so the stories themselves become a little less... I don't want to say thoughtful, but probably a little less complex, a little more fun. So, yeah, that they are a sort of thing in themselves almost. It's almost a bit like, you know, when you sort of have, I'm trying to think of examples because there's so many, X-Files or Batman, where you sort of have Batman in his Gotham world and Justice League, or you have X-Files where you have the Monsters of the Week and you have the conspiracy stories. You almost feel like there's like two separate universes of both those characters, where there's a sort of serious Batman, the Batman that goes off into space and fights monsters, and there's a serious conspiracy arc, and then there's these weird Loch Ness monster stories in X-Files. It almost feels like the multi-Doctor stories almost exist in their own world, because they all carry a similar vibe, which probably doesn't always connect with the rest of the show in a sort of odd way. That maybe a Doctor Who continuity, which is basically an Earthly Child, the Three Doctors, the Five Doctors, the Two Doctors, Dimensions in Time. What else were we talking about? Time Crash, was it called?
Time Crash, yeah. Two Doctors.
Time Crash.
Yeah.
Two Doctors and Day of the Doctor.
Yeah.
Oh, and the last one. Terrible.
Well, yes, we probably should mention that one as well. Yeah. Now, before we get into the nitty gritty, we're of a similar age.
Yeah.
So, which means that we were around the same age in 1983, for obvious reasons. Now, in 1983, I... knew that there was other Doctors, but I didn't have any understanding of how, really. Even though I'd seen Regeneration, so I knew there were other Doctors, but I didn't understand how they could possibly be in the same place at the same time. And my mind came up with all this weird stuff, trying to rationalise how the Five Doctors, or the Four Doctors, as it turned out, could be in the same place at the same time. And I had this thing that, and maybe there was some subconscious sort of retconning of age in there as well, the Doctor's age, particularly, I think it was Pertwee's Doctor I was particularly focused on, is that when the Doctor dies, he doesn't actually die. He just carries on having different adventures. You see how this is working? Because it is kind of right in a way. And then a new body for the Doctor takes over in the TARDIS, and then another TARDIS goes off, like in the Five Doctors. You see what I'm getting at?
Yeah,
so
I see.
My head was trying to work it out.
Yeah, I remember having
a 7-year old head.
I remember having something vaguely similar, not quite as what's the word? Stupid. But it was a little similar. It was I remember a part of me trying to reconcile, and I don't know why I was doing this, and my head got it wrong, but was trying to reconcile the Hartnell to Troughton. And I think it was working on a similar way, where it was somehow thinking that, well, could the Hartnell character still carry on through his time stream, but yet have regenerated? Could he still exist in his own, not so specific as yours, that there's sort of a split, the TARDIS, and then that sort of carries on. But there was this sort of, I think there was a, I vaguely remember sort of grappling or trying to grapple around these issues of where these people were being picked out of time streams. And could they be, because I think I remember, I'm trying to think actually if this was later on or whether that was around that time, might have been later on, but there was the interesting thing with Troughton's Doctor, and obviously the TV comics sort of moving on and doing the Scarecrow stories. So basically the comics, as some people might not know, but probably most who listen to this do, the TV comics sort of carried on the Troughton stories after War Games, where he escapes from being sent back to Earth and has a few stories before he's recaptured by Time Lord Scarecrows. And wondering again if that somehow functioned into continuity, and whether that was the period where, yeah, this would have been me thinking later, this is far too advanced for an 8-year old. whether that was the period where the Time Lords took the Troughton character. Because it was the only where you'd have no Fraser Hines, Wendy Pratt, Zoe and Jamie, who do appear in the Five Doctors as well, and he remembers having them cast away, taken away by the Time Lords. Yeah. So there were weird things which I remember, trying to reconcile. But sorry, your point anyway, because I can't remember where the point was here, is it that they're just very, very weird and quite hard for young people to sort of get their heads around?
I think, yeah, if you're going to look into them seriously, and, you know, a lot of Doctor Who fans do look into things quite seriously, it all starts to get a bit vague and fall your party. So, that was my general gist. I was just trying to relate to that.
Back no, absolutely, that interesting. Idea.
And also, what you're saying there with the Troughton thing, I mean, that goes into the Two Doctors, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, in the Two Doctors, they do actually try and play some of these off, don't they? They try and suggest that he's dropped Victoria off, don't they say?
Yes, they do. You're right. They do. Yes, but he's also obviously visually older as well. So I think it was sort of retconned, in quotes, established in the BBC. Oh no, in fact, the Virgin books, later the BBC books, that he'd gone back for them.
So he'd gone back for them, and then was carrying on before he regenerated. So again, it's in that sort of, we will call, the Scarecrow era. Yes, and he has a very ugly TARDIS as well.
He does, and he has this. Wasn't there some sort of? No, just sort of going sort of behind the scenes that Patrick Troughton lost that he had a wig and it went missing or something.
No,
which
idea.
Seems odd because he's got the right hairstyle. So I don't understand why they didn't just dye his hair. Maybe they lost the hair dye and didn't have
it's
Spanish
odd.
For hair dye.
I suppose there could have been an argument that since they're all in black and white, for all you know, they could have just had, you know, it perhaps could have been grey at some point. I don't know. But it's weird. I mean, there was a thread on this on Twitter the other week, which I thought was quite amusing, with the TARDIS console, where you can't see it, but where they've taken the one from Luke, because at the time it was the sort of 80s high-tech console of the Davison era. No, it wasn't actually. Yes, it was. It was Colin, wasn't it? Of course it was. And to make that TARDIS, they took the top of the Legopolis sort of era console and put it on top of the sort of odd plinth of the Colin Baker one.
Right.
And then they had to put that horrid big surround round it to make it look like the old one. So you get this really fat plinth bottom to it, and it's really odd. And it was the fact that they'd sort of, it was actually a hybrid thing, which I thought was vaguely interesting, which I know is not very interesting to 80% of the one person listening to this, but to the 20% who may also, of that one person be listening to this, might find that vaguely interesting.
Was this one of Clayton Hickman's threads?
It was, yes. Yeah.
I missed this one. Did you know what? Clayton Hickman single-handedly can cheer up any Doctor Who fan with a thread on TARDISes.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff there that I already know, but it's nice that there's stuff there that he has, which I didn't realise or I realise was wrongly reported. I mean, they say there's a lot of stuff that was propagated in the 2000, Doctor Who Monthly in the 90s and 80s, which he says was erroneous.
Right.
Which is kind of interesting. So you sort of get sort of history established by sort of Doctor Who historians, which is actually inaccurate and distorts the history, which is he tries to correct. It's the most interesting thing that I thought, and I'll just deviate here for those who are interested in this sort of stuff, which I thought was quite, I don't believe I'm saying this. I've even said to colleagues I actually do this podcast, so I'm dreading them actually listening to this podcast, this specific one, because if they do, they'll start knowing things about me I don't want them to know. But the lamp on the original TARDIS prop, which he reckons was actually damaged in the Dalek invasion of Earth when they do the drop of the rubble on right. the... Because it's after that you start getting that very sort of that lack of that the non-Fresnel light, which is just that sort of cylinder,
yeah.
which sort of sticks with the TARDIS throughout the 70s. And he reckons that's the point where that act probably damaged that light and they had to get a new one. And that sort of kind of makes sense. And I love that sort of thing. There's sort of history behind props.
Yeah.
And as I've said before, you know, that is like we've got a prop which, okay, it's had various forms, but you're talking about like, a, you know, 55-year history of one prop. I mean, that's ludicrous, even for television.
It
you
is,
know, yeah. you, I mean, to actually have a singular identifiable symbolic icon, which it is, the TARDIS, whatever you want to, time machine, police box, and how it's represented, and how it looks, and how it travels through the production history is fascinating.
It's obviously because it's mirrored in the real world as well. I think that's probably a major part
of it. Absolutely, yeah. So you've got that constant sort of mediation between, or negotiation between that real thing and this prop, and you're sort of trying to sort of see what's happening and what's going on and how they're dealing with it. I think this sort of history is really interesting in television because you don't get it in anything else. That is a sort of symbolism which I don't think any other show has had for so long. Not that I can think of anyway. I mean, even Coronation Street, maybe you could argue with Coronation Street and the Rover's Return.
Coffee shop and Neighbours.
Yeah, but even that is, what, 1985?
Well, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, 1963 to now.
Yeah.
That is a fascinating sort of, in terms of props and history, I think it's a really interesting thing for people to look at. And you shouldn't feel embarrassed about it, James. But you feel very embarrassed. Like Clayton.
Yes. Multi-Doctor stories.
Yes.
So let's run through them, starting with, we'll do them in order of
chronology. Yeah. Okay.
So we'll start with the Three Doctors.
Yeah.
Which is it's fun, isn't it? And it's odd as well. It's very 70s, I think, is the most obvious thing about the Three Doctors. It's very, you watch it now, it feels like, I mean, it could be an episode of The Goodies, the way that the camera effects are used for the gel guards just appearing. And then the Goodies are Python-esque sort of juxtaposition of everyday objects in the quarry. In Omega's domain.
I remember, you know, we're talking about being kids. I remember seeing this very young and actually finding the creatures actually slightly disturbing.
Yeah.
I think because they could appear anywhere, I think the kid is always a little disconcerting.
Yeah.
And there's a certain malevolency to them. But, you know, as an adult, they seem fairly, you know, neutered. I think what's interesting with the Three Doctors is one of those few Doctor Who's which, and it'd be interesting to work out how many do have this structure and which don't, because I was actually just watching Avenger of the Cybermen the other day as I was working. I had it on my writing away and sort of had that on my on my tablet next to me. Is you don't have any, you don't have the traitor character, the traitor redemption character, which is in so many Doctor Who's, but there isn't one in there's no one who's actually working with Omega, is there, Omega is pretty much his singular force.
Yeah.
There's no one there who is working against the protagonist, who in the end has to die either, as I say, in a moment of redemption. I mean, I forgot, even even Kellerman in Revenge of the Cybermen, he does actually push Harry out of the way before he dies, before he's crushed by rocks in Revenge of the Cybermen. So even those which are traitorous or double agents tend to, there's always that redemption thing, but there's none of that in the Three Doctors. It's actually a really barren story in that sense. It is basically
I would agree, but Dr. Tyler,
okay,
there is possibly a feeling when Dr. Tyler comes into it, with, I think he's got some of Hartnell's dialogue, hasn't he? Because I think it was late casting as part of the replacement process.
Yeah.
For the lack of the First Doctor. There is a kind of, I don't know whether it's a lack of conviction or whether or not he doesn't know where the character's going when they're recording it or whatever, but there is a kind of feeling that he's hiding something, which obviously turns out to be not the case. But then again, that could just be informed by watching The Hand of Fear before you've seen The Three Doctors, because it's the same actor, Rex Robinson.
Well, my memories of it are vague, but yes, it is very much a story of...
He seems to know more than he should. I think that's the problem. And that's probably because he's got the dialogue from The First Doctor.
I have to rewatch it for that reason. It's been a while since I've watched it all the way through, and there's probably a good reason for that. I don't find it a particularly enjoyable story. It's interesting. I think historically it's interesting to see Hartnell, and, you know, to be the very First Doctor almost, to have to he is the very First Doctor, have to take up his role again. And that's sort of interesting, because, I mean, at least with Troughton, he is taking up the role from someone else, even though he is at the same time the first one to be sort of retaking his role as well. But yeah, he took the role from Hartnell. Hartnell took the role from no one. So there's a kind of interesting thing going on there. There's some interesting things for fans, I guess. You get a lot of TARDIS stuff, which I'm sure fans, especially at the time, I'm sure enjoyed. You get the interesting playoff, the decision that doctors would not get on well with each other, which is quite a sensible idea, that, you know, you wouldn't like yourself. That's sort of interesting, the way they play that out. And obviously Troughton and Pertwee have a lot of, or appear to be having a lot of fun in it, whether they are or not. I'm not sure they were, if memory serves, from stuff said on the set, but...
I think later on they played with it, didn't they? I think that when they got on better doing conventions,
yeah,
they played on it. But I think this was, I think there's some animosity, ego is probably not the right word, but there's some ego on display.
I think so. So yeah, I'm not over keen on the Three Doctors. It does set the tone for these celebration stories, where they're simple, they're very easy to get into. They sort of have sort of big story structure, you know, big story structures, end of the world, end of, you know, major characters. And they are sort of, to some degree, fairly character light, because the focus largely is on those main characters. So, I mean, there isn't many extra characters in The Three Doctors, really, as I recall anyway, but yeah.
Well, there's obviously the Time Lords.
Yeah, that's true.
We kind of see on Gallifrey for the first time, because it's not entirely clear where they are in the war games. We actually see them at work doing what it is that Time Lords do.
We see them on Gallifrey in Terror of the Autons, though, don't we? Don't we have something before? Isn't there one before where we see them on Gallifrey? Am I wrong? No, Terror of the Autons, you just see the one pop up and chat in the top hat.
In the bowler hat, back upon. Yeah.
Bowler hat. There's no. This is the first one, is it, with the Gallifrey?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, probably is.
Which it all seems rather kind of... obviously, there's different interpretations and ways Gallifrey's been presented over the years, which is a podcast in itself. But it feels like less of the kind of old men's club of deadly assassin, and more of a running around screaming, "What the hell's going on? We can't cope with this," sort of world.
Yeah, it's the first one which starts to dilute the idea. I mean, they appear fairly powerful in Terror of the Autons, even if there's a sort of slight mockingness of the Doctor to them, which you certainly don't get in the war games. This is their downhill slope, sadly.
I do. What I do like about Three Doctors is the resolution. In terms of the recorder not being converted to antimatter because it's in the TARDIS, where it is in the TARDIS. So removing the recorder, which is still matter, in the antimatter world, resolves their adventure and sends them back home again. I like that aspect of it. I think the problem with the Three Doctors is the same problem that all of these stories have, or at least the full-length stories, and that is it doesn't quite meet its initial promise because of the absence of a key character, or the almost absence of a key character.
Yeah.
Which, are we going to move on to...
Yep.
The Five Doctors?
Yep.
Or should we give the fact that there's two Doctors in the Day of the Daleks a quick mention? Well, I've done that now, so... We're one of the Five Doctors. Which is kind of... obviously, we've got the ball rolling in this podcast earlier on. But the Five Doctors is famous for being the Four Doctors. For exactly the reason I just mentioned. That, you know, a key character... Well, two key characters aren't available. And obviously, they've recast William Hartnell's first Doctor with Richard Turnbull. And Tom Baker didn't want to do it. So it's basically a bit of Sharda... That's the Fourth Doctor's appearance in the adventure, and then the rest of it is everyone gets whisked off to Gallifrey and has an adventure.
Yeah.
Now, this has got some interesting broadcast, hasn't it? Because it was on in Australia before it was on here.
So I'm told.
Yeah.
I didn't remember, obviously, at the time. But...
No, nor I. And it was part of Children in Need, which I don't remember either.
Yeah, no, I remember the Children in Need, yeah. Right. I remember that quite vividly.
I don't remember that at all. I remember watching it and being absolutely enthralled by it at the time. Because I think it does what it sets out to do. It isn't perfect, but you have a balanced adventure between these four Time Lords all doing things in a slightly different way.
Mm. Yeah, no, I like it. I have no real issue with it. It's
we've got Anthony Ainley as a master as well, who I think that kind of that subplot, the master subplot bit, is quite good because there's a potential that you could get bored with just watching the Doctor doing the same thing in different places.
Yeah,
and throwing the master in there is a masterstroke, I think.
Well, it throws actually
a slightly different motivation as well to usual, actually. To help the Doctor rather than get in his way.
Which is fun and quite frustrating all the way through. I mean, there's some nice stuff in there. There's landmark stuff, things used for the story, which, like with the Deadly Assassin with Gallifrey, become mythology creating the regeneration cycles that you can just... throw away, you know, throw at someone if they're getting old, you know. Yep. Doesn't make any sense whatsoever, really, for Time Lords, but well, I suppose it does in a sense. You could argue that makes the most sense because you get things where Pertwee sort of suggests that they sort of have a almost infinite life, you know, so maybe regeneration cycles are part of that Time Lords occasionally do sort of just indulge in just reliving. I don't know, it's an interesting offer for the master, but it sort of creates all these, again, these continuity questions. What else is there? Yeah, it's a fun. The Cybermen are used well. There's lots of fun. The Raston Warrior Robot, I remember that as a kid, was really enjoyable. I enjoyed seeing... I was obviously very disappointed as a kid that Baker wasn't in it.
Yeah.
Because I think that was the thing that all kids wanted to see, who had sort of perhaps caught the back end of Baker's era. Yeah, no, it was good, wasn't it? It was a fairly good use of characters, given there's a hell of a lot of side characters. I thought it was nice to see them all.
Yeah. Obviously, there's some people who didn't make it, but it works quite well. As you say, and monsters as well, and you've got the Raston Warrior robot thing as well.
Oddly, never used again. That you'd thought.
Yeah, it's a bit. Is it too powerful? Is it a case
yes.
Is it Neil Gaiman's Cybermen, that sort of problem? Just too powerful, too fast, too... Yeah, it could be that. Well, wasn't there something about Terrence Dix not liking Cybermen?
I'm not sure.
And that's one of the reasons why they didn't appear throughout the Pertwee era. And because he was persuaded that they had to appear in this, that he created the Rastlemore robot to just decimate them. I'm sure I've heard that story.
It could be. I mean, they are decimated all the way through. I mean, having just watched Revenge of the Cybermen, it is amazing quite how much loss they've had in becoming solid foes, you know. And in this one, yeah, they're just absolute cannon fodder throughout. It does. There are some things in there which always sound odd. You know, they drop. There's that line that Davison has, that the Daleks always played the games too well. And again, you're starting to feel like, well, I suppose that, you know, they are mentioned to be known by the Doctor in what's it called? Genesis of the Daleks. You get the whole thing that he's the Time Lords are well aware of the Daleks, but obviously when he first meets the Daleks, no one knows about them. And suddenly it's like, oh yeah, historically they've always been on the, you know. But
maybe it was classified.
Yeah, it was classified. Yes, you have to find those sort of stories, but it's still fun. It's a good. But again, it's that example that it doesn't really sit because no one ever mentions it again. You know, Turlough and I know they can't, but you've had Turlough and Tegan who have just sort of seen five incarnations of their. What would you call it, of their friend, and yet that's never really mentioned.
No. Maybe they don't remember it.
Well, maybe that's so.
That's been written into these events, hasn't it? Is it written into Time Clash or not? I'm not sure about that, actually, now I've said it.
No, I'm
maybe,
not
maybe
sure.
I'm thinking of expanded media.
But yeah, the expanded media, and so do the Doctor, suggest the Doctors forget. I'm not sure where the Companions are meant to.
Right, okay.
Yeah, because there is the argument of Sarah Jane Smith, isn't there, and her comments in School Reunion, people have said, would argue that means that she doesn't remember meeting the Doctor in the Five Doctors. Doesn't she sort of suggest that she hasn't seen him in...
Yes, you're right, yes. Okay. Well, push on a year or two. A year. It is a year, isn't it? The 20th anniversary and then the 21st anniversary. The Two Doctors, which apparently came about because Patrick Charlton was enjoyed being in the Five Doctors, in which he appeared to have dyed his hair so much that he wanted to do it again. So along comes this Spanish adventure. The Two Doctors it's got some nice stuff in it, but for me it's far too long and there's far too much nonsense in Spain.
Yeah. And I think as a kid you don't particularly like some of the things going on. I mean, as a kid I didn't like the changes to the Troughton character. The Troughton character sort of spends most of the time prisoner as well.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's just
and then
got
you've
things.
Got Oscar as well, which seems and that whole thread seems utterly pointless to me.
Yeah. You started. I mean, obviously, by this point, you're starting to get. Well, Robert Holmes does love his little B plot, but it just doesn't come together in this.
It doesn't. Which is odd because usually they do. I think the sun's got to them all, personally.
Well, it's indicative of the era as well. There's something about it in this era, obviously, that is very cold and brutal and just not much fun.
Yeah.
I mean, there isn't... with Doctor Who, I mean, even the Gallifrey and the Five Doctors, even the Death Zone, it looks sort of slightly exciting and dangerous, and there's a certain amount of fun in this barren Welsh land, but... In the Two Doctors, I wouldn't really want to be part of Perry's storyline, the Doctor's storyline, the Second Doctor's storyline. I just don't want to be on board the TARDIS in that world. I think that's my biggest issue with Colin Baker's era. There's just nothing about it that really sings to you that I want to be on this adventure, or even I want to watch this television show.
Yes,
and that's thankfully sort of changes within McCoy's era as it changed, as it was different. I felt for the Davison era, but
So you've got, I mean, there are characters in here that have kind of made their mark on Doctor Who, though. It's not as if it's not without any merit at all. You've obviously got Dastari's character.
Yeah.
A time scientist, we'll call him. You've got Shassini. Oh, is he a time scientist or not? I forget. Oh, no. That's right. No, someone else are time doing time experiments. And the Doctor wants Dastari to help him shut the time experiments down. That's it. That's right. Then you've got Shassini, played by Blake Seven's Jacqueline Pierce, who is an augmented Andragum. And the Andragums are sort of ginger. Are they just Scottish clones?
I don't know. I think they're largely Scottish clones.
In fact, you know what? This has just struck me. Going back to the Three Doctors, how I mentioned the Python goodies sort of thing. There's a Monty Python sketch, which actually goes very well with the Three Doctors, of a Scotsman winning Wimbledon, which obviously is not fiction or comical anymore. But this Scotsman has to win Wimbledon against a kind of a gel guard sort of creature, blob, from outer space. It's just striking me the similarities between the Scotsman in Monty Python's sketch and the Andragums. Very, very silly stereotyping, cartoon stereotyping. I'm sure everyone laughed at it, but then again, I don't know how many people were watching The Two Doctors. How many people were watching The Two Doctors, Wikipedia? 6 million to 7 million. Not too bad. This was a Saturday night show, wasn't it, at the time, still?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it went back to Saturdays, didn't it? Yeah. I mean, it's a six-parter, essentially, and it's at least three parts too long, I would say.
Is it technically six, is it? Yeah, I can't remember.
It's 3:45 minute.
3:45 episodes, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's just not enough there for it to do that.
Absolutely. I think it's the last six-parter, essentially.
Yeah. So what's next after that?
It's Dimensions in Time, isn't it?
Dimensions in Time.
Which will rarely pop up in anyone's list of their favourite multi-doctor stories. It's not entirely without its memorable moments.
I still don't mind it that much. I think once you accept what it is, it's just a bit of fun. I don't take... It's short, which is important. Very important. I kind of like what it's trying to say or trying to do, although it doesn't manage to do it well. I kind of like this idea of how it's suggesting that the Scoop is sort of taking almost like snapshots out of continuity and yet in somehow inserting them within the snapshots or the present, so Ace can become Leela even though she's not Leela. And that, I think, is a very interesting idea, and it's not something you really see done in Doctor Who before. And I think there's a lot of advanced ideas in there, which just because of, again, the celebratory setting, just can't come to fruition. I like it for that. I did, for the Hoobleek Strategies book that came out, that we both took part in, was one of mine, was The Dimensions in Time, which was kind of fun to do because it was one where you've got, for those who don't know, the Hoobleek Strategy book sort of allows you to, there's like a continuity of Doctor Who where each story has 200 word very small stories, little what would you call them,
flash
stories, yeah, for each episode that I relate to that episode, and one of mine was Dimensions of Time, and I kind of liked it because it gave me an excuse to sort of try and validate it in some way and make it relevant, because it had a production code. It was done by John Nathan Turner. It was part of Doctor Who. It was never really meant to be non-canon. It was just
it was basically EastEnders doing their musical number that they're doing Children in Need now, wasn't it? It was the same thing.
Yeah, so I sort of kind of argued that given that it was Ace at the time, I sort of argued that this was a sort of another sort of like a block transfer world taken from her cultural memory and then mapped around them, and that was part of the trap. The trap wasn't there on Earth, that they were actually trapped within a block transfer construct of Earth using her memories and that was their cage. So it sort of gave an excuse for this sort of slight absurdity to it. And I think as soon as you try and put some foundations on it, it could probably be quite a good story. I mean, if you wrote that as a novel, and maybe you sort of downplayed the EastEnders bits, or you took out the actual EastEnders. Well, no, as I say, if you did it as a block transfer, you could use it as EastEnders, and actually did it as a proper story, it probably could be quite interesting. But yeah, I mean, it's unpopular for obvious reasons.
I don't know if you recall this, we did actually do a commentary on Dimensions in Time in 2016.
Bloody hell, that's... vaguely remember that, yes. I mean, I think the worst part, I think the bit that I think rankles most is when they do that menagerie of monsters on the market, and it just looks like everything's just being whacked onto the market store stands. Fifi's just trying to growl there, this old prop, and it just looks a bit naff.
It does. It isn't perfect by any means. It's got some good stuff in it. For instance, it's got
what
this.
What year is this? Oh, don't you start. Enough oddballs around here as it is.
Madam, what year is this?
I am presuming you're putting something there.
Yes, I am putting something there. That okay. Was, Madam, what year is this? Where John Pertwee's
oh, yes.
teeth seem to get in the way of his diction slightly. But then, you know, there's the... there's the scene at the famous London landmark. His name escapes me at the moment, and he will come to me, and I'll cut this bit out. there's the scene at Greenwich,
yeah.
Which is a location that's since been used in a major Hollywood superhero movie.
Well, there's lots of...
Yeah, go on.
I was going to say, I mean, there's lots of things to love about it, because you get the opportunity to see... characters that if you dismiss this, you dismiss the possibility of seeing them again. I mean, Victoria's in it, as I recall.
Yeah.
Very briefly. I mean, you've got Romana in there. You've got all sorts of characters from the history of the show, which you don't ever get to see again. And it's like, well, why not celebrate that and try and get around the issues of it and not try and dismiss it? And sort of go, well, this is a rather nice moment for all these actors to come back and have a quick go at these characters which have long since gone. I mean, okay, then along came Big Finish and gave people a far greater opportunity to do that with a bit more gravitas and integrity. But, yeah, I've never understood why people try and dismiss Dimensions of Time from canon, but be quite happy to try and keep Time Lash there, or the two Doctors.
Well, yeah, I think it's because there's the option that they can more of an option.
Yes,
they can,
that's very true.
To the other. I think as well, you've got the Fourth Doctor in there.
Mm-hmm.
You've got K-9 in there.
Yeah.
There's Romana. There's that weird stuff at the pub. There's the Rani in there, obviously, because she's the she's the bad guy, as it were. It's not bad at all. It's, you know, when we watched it in 2016, that was probably the only time I've enjoyed it. And maybe it's because I was watching it, you know, cybernetically speaking, virtually with friends.
Yeah.
Rather than behind a kind of hand, you know, just about to facepalm myself in 1993 with my parents in the room. So, you know, it's if there's two things that are guaranteed to embarrass a young Doctor Who fan, and that is Doctor Who being naff or some kind of sexual content on the television. Whatever it is.
Yeah, it's
So yeah, Dimensions in Time, and that was the last time we had a multi-doctor story, wasn't it? For
a while.
14 years.
Yeah. Well, then we should say obviously the books and the audio plays did.
Yes, they did them a lot.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to get through any New Adventures run of novels, at least, without having a mention or, you know, a kind of
spectral mind, appearance,
yes, or a mind conversation with a previous self.
Yes,
there,
absolutely.
There was one of these. What one of these had? Which one was it now? There's one of them had the Doctors all locked up into their own compartments in the Doctor's brain.
Well, there's loads that sort of did that.
Yeah.
I mean, The Room with No Doors was very much about the other Doctors boxing up the Seventh Doctor for his crimes.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes,
there, yeah. There was, you know, the Time Warp series, the Paul Cornell one. Well, no, it wasn't. It was Was it Time Worm? I can't remember. It does a lot with them. Oh, they're everywhere, as you say, and they become very integral to so many of the stories. But, I mean, actual multi-doctor stories, you've got, certainly if we go into the BBC ranges, you get a few of those. Cold Fusion is quite a popular one, if we're going to start picking them from those sort of extended areas, which appeared in the Missing Adventures, but then reappeared in the Big Finish range, which was Davison and McCoy. Mm. That was always considered quite an enjoyable and clever one, which didn't really have them. That was very much a story which had them sort of very separated and running two different storylines, which was a sort of very different way to do it. And again, interesting, because you're not doing it in a celebratory fashion where your audiences want to see them interacting all the time, and that's why they're watching. It's a sort of, because you didn't have that sort of pressure, able to do something a little different.
There's a similar one, isn't there? There's one with the Fourth and the Second Doctor as well, isn't there?
Yes, I'm trying to think what it was called. But yeah, there's loads of quite good ones. There's the Project Lazarus Twilight series for Big Finish, which was Sixth and Seventh Doctor, which normally has quite a lot of support for. People like that one. But yeah, they have been done.
Well, Big Finish does tend to kind of pick the ideas, doesn't it?
It does.
It does find those very niche areas where perhaps a story hasn't been told that could be told. There's which brings to mind the Twitter account that I found by accident last night, which is called Big Finish Pitches, which doesn't appear to do very much, although they did recently post something on Twitter, but they hadn't done anything since last year. This is at Big Pitches. The most recent pitch was actually a retweet of Big Finish themselves advertising the fact that Michelle Ryan is reprising the role of Lady Christina in her own series, which I kind of does seem to many fans to be a kind of a step too far in a particular direction of nicheness, which I think is the point of this parody account, Big Pitches. For instance, some of their pitches that they've included are... David Bradley is back as the First Doctor in Doctor Who, The First Doctor Adventures, out in January, which is then followed by David Bradley is back as the Second Doctor in Doctor Who, The Second Doctor Adventures, out in February.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they're not happy with a female doctor? Try our new box set where the doctor keeps saying he's a man unprompted over and over again.
I like it in itself. I mean, it's a very interesting commentary on how much these on Big Finish as a sort of extension of Doctor Who is well, from the perspective of some fans.
Can I just stop you?
Yeah.
Bessie Lives box set. Bessie, voiced by Nicholas Briggs, murders popular children's character Brum.
I mean, there's things in here which, I mean, it is a sort of very meta site, which is what makes it quite amusing. I mean, the fact that virtually everyone is played by Nicholas Briggs is Scooby-Doo, played by Nicholas Briggs. For Scooby-Doo meets Batman. It does have its own... sort of, I don't know. I kind of find it amusing. I mean, this was running before, obviously, the announcement of Christina. But it is playing on this idea that the Big Finish just mops up everything. And it's a kind of hard thing. I'm mixed on it. I'm behind on a review for the Doctor Who Companion on the Churchill Chronicles Volume 2, which is one of the Big Finish audios, which obviously deals with the Churchill character from Victory of the Daleks and expands him into a bigger universe, which in itself feels a bit like, do we need that?
Well, he's not really the Churchill character from Victory of the Daleks. He does have a kind of life of his own beyond Doctor Who, doesn't he?
What, you mean Churchill generally?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he did have a life beyond Doctor Who. But the Churchill in Victory of the Daleks, and perhaps this is an argument for why Big Finish does, isn't a bad thing. For me, as we said, I think last time, Victory of the Daleks is one of the worst Dalek episodes I can remember. Did we talk about Victory of the Daleks? We did one about Daleks. Did we not talk about Victory of the Daleks? We must have.
Yes, we did briefly, yes.
Briefly. Anyway, it's terrible. And one of the things I like about this box set is that it actually gives certain amount of relevance to that story. Because, I mean, there's this suggestion in the story that Churchill is familiar with the Doctor, which in itself is sort of vaguely irritating because the Doctor is always familiar with everyone. But it's kind of nice to have that expanded. And suddenly you're seeing this character in a different light, in a different adventures, with different Doctors. And then that can feed back into this idea that, you know, when you watch this story and there's suddenly this camaraderie between the two, it doesn't feel sort of so standalone. It feels like it's more entrenched. It feels like it has a more of an immersion into the universe of Doctor Who, if you see what I mean. Because I think one of the things I disliked about Victory of the Daleks is the way you almost feel like you're rudely stepping in on a relationship which you've never seen before, or maybe that you're feeling annoyed that this relationship has suddenly thrust upon you, as if suddenly, of course, these two knew each other because Churchill's just the greatest person ever. And that's sort of vaguely irritating. So I think sometimes when they do this with Big Finish, it can actually help embed or enrich some of the stories which perhaps haven't worked quite as well on television. So some of these pitches are quite amusing. But at the same time, I feel a bit sorry for Big Finish because what they're doing, I think, still is kind of good. I mean, you don't have to listen to this stuff as well.
Well, no, that's true, yeah.
I mean, I don't think I've got really much interested in listening to David Bradley extend his Adventures in Time First Doctor. But I can understand people who would, and I think it's quite an interesting idea.
I think this Twitter feed obviously is kind of,
yeah,
it is a parody site.
It is, but it has a truth to the parody as well.
It does have a truth to it. I mean, I don't think we'll ever see the Pig Bin Josh Adventures, a Troll CD book set of stories set in the time between him falling into the river and going inside Axos. But I'm not entirely saying I wouldn't want to.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, they've got a list here of pitches. Things like the Linda Files, starring Mark Warren, Camille Cordieri, and Peter Kay. And it's like, well, yeah, who knows? Perhaps it could be vaguely interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. Some of this stuff, I mean, I like the Sarah Jane Adventures, the story goes on, Companion Chronicles style, class, you know, class year two. I couldn't watch class year one, but if you like this stuff and they can make it, and it can be financially viable, I mean, I think that's the beauty of where we are now. And this is something that always really irritated our old colleague Brian, is that you can't absorb everything. There's too much now that you can't take it all in. You in the end, you are going to miss stuff because there's just too much Doctor Who available for you to be able to consume.
Yeah.
But that's kind of nice in a weird way, because it gets away from the problem that we're talking about with these Doctor Who multi-Doctor stories, which are pulled together for celebrations to maximize attention, you know, at a point in the show's production, in a sense, to try and keep its longevity. It's a good excuse to pull in new people. So they're very, very straightforward. They're very sort of run of the mill.
Yeah.
And here you've got a situation where now we've come, there's so much nicheness to even Doctor Who. You can fire out all sorts of different styles of stories on so much different content, and it can still work. And you don't have to listen to it all. And perhaps that's a good thing.
Ooh. Perhaps it is. Here's another couple more to throw at you. Nicholas Briggs plays Peter Kay as the Absorbeloff in Doctor Who The Clum Chronicles.
I kind of like that idea in a weird way, because you get characters that have no real space to breathe in the show. And I was saying this the other night, last night, to a colleague. We were watching, Lucifer, you know, the procedural crimes show.
Sure.
And based on the Gaiman character. And it was just one of those random thugs who gets beaten up. And you think a bit like the old Austin Powers thing. It's like, what has been the 30 years of that character's life? What brought him to this moment? If we had a show which was on this character that lasted his whole life, you know, and this would this be the final moment? Would this be the Blake Seven moment where he's beaten and killed by, the devil incarnate, which he has no idea is? Would that be the end of it? What was his story? And I kind of like the idea that you get to see what these stories are, who these people could be, who have a sort of very momentary existence within another person's world, the Doctor's world. I'm not saying I'd like to see all of them. The Linda Files, I'm not sure. The Nardole versus Universe, I'm not sure about that either. But
what about the Clayton Hickman crisis?
Well, yes, that's kind of good with the signs and fonts.
Encountered? Oh no, not that one. No, encountered the real TARDIS police box and discovers that it's technically inaccurate.
Well, yeah, that's where we go beyond the pale. But that, these things are interesting because I think the point is that as a product, let's forget it as a narrative, Doctor Who is interesting to most people who are listening to this podcast. It won't simply be the stories. It will be the actors. It will be the production. It will be the merchandise. It will be the questions of whether there should be or shouldn't be a female doctor, or shouldn't there be a doctor be in love with Rose. You know, these are the things, you know, all intersect. There's this massive intersection of all these things, and it's all fascinating. So, yeah, I kind of find that amusing in its own way. I'm not sure I'd listen to it as a... I probably would, actually. I probably would.
If you were asked to for a review, you probably would.
I would probably review that. I'd like to see what he thinks. Or send him through time so he can actually see the actual truths. Of when did that lamp get broken? No, it wasn't the Dalek of Invasion of Earth. It was, you know, I don't know, Tea Lady knocking it off a table in the episode beforehand. You know,
microphone boom.
Microphone boom. Yeah, who knows? Could be a microphone boom.
Okay. Well, let's move on to our, back onto the main thrust of the podcast. Time Crash. Well, no, we haven't, have we? I was going to say we've missed out another Stephen Moffat story, but we haven't really, because it's not a multi-doctor story. It's just a multi-regeneration story. So I don't think we need to worry too much about Curse of the Fatal Death. So Time Crash, in which... It's basically a love letter, isn't it, Time Crash?
Yes.
It's a little bit cloyy in places, I think, in which the 10th Doctor and the 5th Doctor come face-to-face within the TARDIS. Following the end of a series
finale.
Which one is it?
It's the Last of the Time Lords, isn't it?
Is it Last of the Time? It is, yeah. It's Last of the Time Lords, isn't it? So Last of the Time Lords goes straight into Time Crash, which ends with the Titanic coming through the wall. I don't mind Time Crash. It's all right. It's not the 5th Doctor, though. That's the only problem for me.
Mm.
It's a 5th Doctor with a slightly different personality.
Well, I mean, he sort of has the personality from the Big Finish.
Well, yes, yeah.
He plays it very much in that sort of line where he's a little more irritable.
Yes.
There's more Hartnell about him than Troughton, strangely. He seems as he's got older to prefer that sort of element to him. Yeah, he's not quite the same. I mean, there's some lines in there that don't work. I mean, the Linda line is really awkward.
Yes.
But there are some lines which are a lot of fun, isn't there? There's the doctor, the master and his beard is a nice
joke.
Gag. Yeah. It's a good gag there. There's some nice bits where they shift the music to the 80s. And again, from the whole idea, this intersection of webbiness of Doctor Who, there's lots of things in here which are fun because it is, again, a celebratory moment. So it's meant to be light. Yeah, I like how they try and get round the age and maybe the difference in style of the person. Is you, it sort of works. There's a nice, very simple play on the whole thing, I suppose, of the Doctors. I mean, Stephen Moffat, obviously being a massive Doctor Who fan, has obviously thought about the same issues that we're talking about here when it comes to old Doctor Who stories, of multi-Doctor Who stories. You know, how do they remember stuff? Well, in this, yeah, he remembered. The joke is he remembers because he was there.
Yeah.
This is
also probably the only multi-doctor story that... Well, no, it's not, because we've got the two doctors. I was going to say it's the only multi-doctor story that doesn't have a doctor missing. But there isn't a doctor missing in the two doctors. Although I suppose the doctor's hair's missing in the two doctors.
You could argue that it's a doctor story which... No, I've lost my point there. I'm sure it was going to be a good one.
Yes. Well, Time Crash, which was a... Children in Need, wasn't it?
Yep, Children in Need again.
And the first multi-doctor story following the series return 2 years early in 2005. Let's move on to the most recent. Well, not the most recent, the last but one most recent, The Day of the Doctor.
Yes.
Which features three doctors, but not the three you're expecting. Early on, if early rumours were to be believed. So we'll just recap. The three doctors was missing not missing William Harnell, but had an unwelcome William Harnell, who's a lot of his lines had to go to another actor or get split between other actors. The five Doctors missed William Harnell because he sadly passed away. First Doctor was recast, and also missed the fourth Doctor because Tom Baker didn't want to be involved. And the Day of the Doctor misses the ninth Doctor and introduces a new Doctor in his place, because Chris Eccleston decided quite late on that he didn't want to be involved. That sums it up, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But at the same time, it does also manage to have all of the Doctors and the next one in it. So, chronologically speaking. So, it does the job that none of the others have done, in a way.
Yeah.
And it is a lot of fun, but the whole Zygon thing does... It, feel like it probably shouldn't be there. I don't know. I'm kind of conflicted on the Day of the Doctor, because I love the scenes with the three of them. I love the Gallifrey stuff. The Black Archive stuff and the Zygon stuff tends to annoy me slightly. It seems to be too slow. I don't know.
It is, yeah. I've never fantastically enjoyed it. I think the Zygon stuff is slow and a bit confused. There's some nice pocket moments in there. The stuff in the Black Archives is nice. There's some good little bits in there. There's some nice lines in there given to Tennant's character. I don't know if in some degree, and this is the same, I suppose, with any multi-doctor story, but it's evident in that, whether it sort of kind of trivializes his character a bit. He is now just the sort of slightly silly, slightly sexualized, and I don't know, he almost feels like a teenager almost.
Who, 10?
Yeah, 10.
Yeah, he has. It doesn't feel like the 10th Doctor that we saw in his last story.
No, which...
Or even the one that we saw in the stories leading up to that, which he is. He's the Doctor from the stories leading up to his last story, and yet he doesn't seem like the same guy.
Quite. Isn't he meant to be... He's meant to be between, isn't he, the Water of Mars and... End of Time, because it's the whole thing about the Elizabeth that fits in there.
Yeah,
it sort of works. I must admit, I know a lot of people love the John Hurt Doctor, but he's never really worked for me. I never really felt that John Hurt, I mean, maybe he found it a little better when he did the audios, but certainly in these, I never felt that particularly as if he really was comfortable in that role. He was all right. It's a shame that Eccleston wasn't there. I think Eccleston would have been very interesting to see that played out.
Definitely, yeah.
The Dalek War is very superficial. It never impressed me. I just kind of felt, you know, this is, you know, a big epic Dalek War would be a little more, as we've said before, than Daleks with guns shooting Time Lords.
Well, just rewind back to what you're saying about Eccleston there.
Yeah.
If you've got the Ninth Doctor, who carries this massive guilt through the 13 episodes, realising not only... did he not destroy his planet, but that he's then got to forget about the fact that he didn't destroy his planet by the end of the episode. That's like, you know, the way Eccleston, we know how you know, we all know Christopher Eccleston, the way Eccleston would have done that would have been fantastic television.
Yeah.
Instead, we've got somebody who's completely detached from that being the person involved.
Yeah.
And you know, you can't get Christopher Eccleston. And, you know, John Hurt's a great actor, but, you know, you can't get Christopher Eccleston. Well, get Paul McGann, then. The older, wiser Doctor in there. And I know, obviously, we've got the Night of the Doctor, but it does feel like... I'm still not entirely convinced by John Hurt's Doctor. And does the job, but he doesn't feel like the Doctor. And, you know, you could say, well, he's not the Doctor, is he?
But he doesn't feel like a war doctor either to me.
No.
He doesn't feel... And again, I mean, obviously the excitement of getting Hurt cast is great, and he's a great actor, but I just never felt that it was a role that he was really...
He's playing a man who's worn out, but he could be worn out by a walk up a hill. Eccleston did, for 13 episodes, the man who's worn out by war. So
I suppose, again, we're hitting the situation of the multi-doctors, and that is that there are always celebratory episodes to sort of gain interest. to be a spectacle, to be a moment which the BBC can advertise and be proud of, and for that you want to maximise your viewers.
Sure.
So who do you go for? Do you go for Paul Mahoo, or do you go for internationally acclaimed and known John Hurt? And I'm sure there's a lot of that in there, which is why McGann wasn't picked, and while Hurt was, because he has an international name, which can bring new people in, while McGann doesn't carry that sort of capital.
Which is a shame, because he's one of the best actors of his generation.
I think McGann's great. I think it's a shame, because quite frankly, as we've said before, you know, Moffat's always seemed to have been a fan of the actor. So I wonder whether it's just simply commerce and politics, that meant that could be done.
McGann doesn't get enough credit for this, but he's got an amazing voice.
Yes, he has got a brilliant voice.
It's
funny actually, because he is actually an incredible choice for the Doctor in the 90s. Because while so much casting by then isn't really done in that sort of traditional British casting, which is so much to do with presence and voice. I mean, I loved Sylvester McCoy to pieces, but his voice is nothing. Well, I mean, it is actually quite a cool voice in a lot of ways, but it hasn't got that sort of British element to it that, say, Tom Baker or John Pertwee had. The same for Peter Davison. Maybe Peter Davison's one I should be picking on here rather than McCoy. But you get into a period where that sort of legacy of British production, BBC production, isn't so keyed into that sort of traditional structure of what you have in your actors, that powerful presence and voice. And yet McGann kind of has that, but on a far more gentle scale.
Mm.
It's far more in tune with that sort of era, even though he hasn't got that sort of... you know, that sort of middle-class British voice. He is back to that sort of feel. So, yeah, and that, again, like I say, I suppose I'm doing a massive insult to Baker, Davison and McCoy, who really do have great voices, especially in the audios.
I think there's something very... Yeah, I think, you know, they've all done adverts, I think. Well, I don't know if McCoy's done adverts. Beyond an old mobile phone advert promotional photo in the 90s. Well, you know, when a Paul McGann voice comes on an advert, you kind of sit up and take note, because you think it's something serious is going on.
Yeah, this is what I mean. It's just a very... He has a very, very strong voice.
He has a relaxed urgency.
Yes. That befits the sort of the diversity within those original Doctors. And again, I stress, Davison, Baker and McCoy are all great. Baker, yeah, I know I slate his TV shows, but his voice is great in the audios. It's a very strong, and McCoy plays a lot on his voice as well, especially in the audios. And Davison I've just adored since I was a child, but there is just something about that sort of, I don't know, that sort of British casting of tone that McCoy seems, and McGann seems to hark back to for me. I don't know. Don't you hate it when you sort of get on something, it's on the tip of your brain, but you can't quite articulate it? It's really, really irritating.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yes. I use podcasts to get over that. So Twice Upon a Time, then.
Yeah, well, I suppose we could say Twice Upon a Time. Does that almost suggest that the new series chronology, does the Hartnell ones actually exist? Is it really the Bradley Adventures from Big Finish, which are the beginning of the... I suppose it doesn't, because we have the morph at the beginning from Hartnell to Bradley, and we've obviously had Hartnell in various shots in the montages in the various. I suppose what was, I can't even remember the names of them now. The Tennant Doctor one with the Next Doctor. Couldn't remember the title.
Oh, the Next Doctor, right?
Yeah,
right.
The Next Doctor. I couldn't think of Morrissey's last name either. I think David. The only Doctor, the one Doctor, the annoying Doctor, the lackluster Doctor. Couldn't get it. The Next Doctor, and I can't. Yeah, because I was going to say, how we see Hartnell in the montage in the Next Doctor. That's all it was. And so, what did you think of the Twice Upon a Time?
Yeah, I haven't watched it properly yet.
Haven't you?
No, Bruce has watched it, and I sat down to watch it with him, and then something happened with the baby, so I got up and dealt with the baby, and then kept popping back into it. So I've seen bits of it, but it just seemed to lack urgency, really, which seems to be... And, you know, I can only base this on watching probably 15 minutes of a 60-minute show, but it didn't seem to be killing it for me, really, like a regeneration story should. Should I rewatch it from the beginning, or is that a fair summation at this point?
I was bored, so no, I think it was pretty awful.
Yeah. A regeneration story should be energetic. You know, Legopolis isn't the most energetic regeneration story. It does have some dwelling moments, but the last episode is fantastic. In terms of the execution of the regeneration as well, I think could have been a bit better. And I think it was overly self-indulgent. But that does seem to be a kind of a common complaint throughout a lot of Stephen Moffat's Doctor Who.
It is terribly indulgent. I mean, I said that with the Matt Smith one, and having rewatched the Matt Smith one many times, I do actually find his end speech actually is quite touching.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it is also the way he plays it. He plays it with a sort of a lovely bittersweetness to it, and he performs it with a lot of animation in his body. It just works. The Capaldi one feels, and I, as we've said at the time, I think, you know, apparently Capaldi had input into it as well. It just feels long. It feels drawn out. It doesn't. Again, it just reminds me. I don't know who the Capaldi Doctor is. Yeah. I couldn't imagine the Capaldi Doctor in season 8 saying any of this stuff. I don't see why he's so focused on the next Doctor. Never seems to have had been before. I know you could say, well, that's novel, but it just doesn't feel like him. And the music's nice behind it. It ends in a typical TARDIS explosion regeneration. It just feels worn out. I don't like... Again, this is the problem with shows, is that an idea gets put in, then it sort of becomes extended. And you could even argue that with, as we were saying earlier, with the idea of the regeneration cycles in the Five Doctors. Something happens and it becomes something which almost becomes a motif. As we said a few podcasts ago, the time release from the Doctor in Parting of the Ways, which looked to be like it was the time energy from the time vortex, becomes a staple regeneration effect.
Yeah.
Now you have this thing where you had that one story where the Doctor held back his regeneration while he said goodbye to his friends in the end of time, and now we have a whole story with him refusing to regenerate because he wants to die. And it just feels like you're just extending these ideas that have been done before, and you're sort of weakening them.
Yeah.
And I never quite feel I understand why he wants to suddenly give up. I never feel I quite believe it. I never quite feel that his decision not to has any strength or any reason. I don't really believe in the Hartnell Doctor's logic either. It all feels very contrived.
Yeah.
And I don't like how the First Doctor's recreated as well. I find he's, as we've said before, a conduit to the 1960s questions of misogyny. Well, not necessarily misogyny, that's probably a sexism. Slight homophobia, all these sort of things which are floating around, which weren't necessarily all to do with the 60s, because 60s did have some very enlightened people at the time. We did have hippies. But no, we characterize the Doctor in this as being the old guard, 50s, reluctantly coming to the 60s. Essentially, it is William Hartnell, not the First Doctor. Yeah. And that seems insulting to Hartnell. It seems insulting to the Doctor. It seems insulting as a cultural, sort of culturally identifying him in this sort of way, with this sort of slightly smirky look at the 60s and the 1910s, because they're both pretty much the same, and they have the same attitude to women, really. And we'll sort of smartly laugh at this. While we're not exactly perfect at the moment either, anyway. We've still got our BBC bumbling around on it, trying to make sure that women and men are paid equally. So, I don't feel like we're in a position to be pedestaling ourselves that greatly. It just feels a mess, and it feels a sort of smug mess, and yeah.
A smug mess at Christmas.
A smug mess at Christmas. There's some weird attempts as well, as we talked about this before, to try and fix continuity, where he tries to justify why the Hartnell Doctor doesn't look like Hartnell anymore, because he's at the end of his regeneration, and maybe there's some sort of changes occurring. Yet then you still have the Ben and Polly, who apparently are also regenerating. It's like, why did you include that? You didn't need them in there.
Yeah.
And it just feels like, again, it's all those arguments against John Nathan Turner's era you can revisit here. There are things there for the fans which just don't need to be there.
Yeah.
We don't need the 10th planet. I mean, the fact they actually did that whole end 10th planet bit with the Cybermen is crazy. They never even got into the show. And you just don't need it. you could have just had the Doctor meeting the Doctor in the North Pole at the very end of the 10th Planet if you had to do that.
Yeah.
It's and I think in the end, Twice Upon a Time spells out all the problems with multi-Doctor stories. It's almost like it's an essay too. It doesn't really identify the aspects of each Doctor. It focuses too much on the cultural reflection of the times. It over justifies when it needs to. It under justifies when it needs to. Yeah.
There. So let's rewind through our multi-Doctor stories. Three Doctors, the Five Doctors, the Two Doctors, Dimensions in Time, The Day of the Doctor, Time Crash, beg your pardon, The Day of the Doctor, and Twice Upon a Time. I think it's only fair that we kind of nominate our particular favourites. I'm going to go with The Five Doctors. I suspect you may as well, but I don't know.
Oh, that's a damn good question, isn't it?
I think as much as I like The Day of the Doctor, and The Day of the Doctor has a very good ending, not just to the adventure, but like the visuals, and then the moment with the curator.
Yeah.
As much as I love the end of The Day of the Doctor, and you know, we often say that ending well is better than ending poorly, because it makes it more memorable. I think the Five Doctors ends well, and it's more enjoyable throughout.
Yeah, I was just trying to work out whether I could pick Dimensions in Time, but I don't think I can get fly. I think it's going to have to be the Five Doctors. I agree with you with everything you said on The Day of the Doctor. There's some really nice bits in there, some lovely lines. There's a great line of Tennant versus the Rabbit. There's some lovely lines from Matt Smith, who is good throughout. There's some fun. There's, as you say, the curator bit is a nice, innovative little bit of add-on for the show. It's not a bad story. It's the story lets it down. The Zygons don't give it any strength. The Daleks are a bit weak in it. And as I say, I just don't really feel that John Hurt adds much. I almost kind of feel like it'd be better without him, as cruel as that sounds somehow. He just feels a bit tacked on. I don't know. So yeah, I think I'd have to go with The Five Doctors, which has got a nice pace. All the Doctors are in it are used well. Even Herdnall, I think, kind of works in that story, even though he's nothing like Hartnell. Doctors.
Okay, the Five Doctors. But what about you, dear listener? What do you think? Which is your favourite multi-Doctor story, and why? Let us know on Facebook or Twitter, or email us if you like, podcastobris@gmail.com, or just leave a comment below the podcast at beyondcastobris.com. Let us know. We will be back at some point in the future. Until then, it's goodbye.
This is a Beyond Casterbrus podcast, available on iTunes, Audioboom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbrus.com.